By Kamenetsky, if I knew you were going to give me that introduction, I would not have agreed to come. But I do appreciate it from the bottom of my heart. As Rabbi Kamenetsky mentioned, our families go back literally generations, and our friendship runs incredibly, incredibly deep. Rabbi Kam, today the topic we're going to discuss in a moment is the idea of finding our mission, finding our place, fulfilling the role for which we were created. And Rabbi Kamenetsky certainly is an individual who is fulfilling his role, meeting his purpose. Not only here at DRS, in which he's had such a transformational impact on the yeshiva and on this community, but there are hundreds if not thousands of people around the world, many of them mechanchim and rabbanim, who found their inspiration, who found their path because of you, Rabbi Kamenetsky. So, though he talked about our friendship, and I don't want to embarrass him, he is a few years older than I am. And growing up in Teaneck, he was and continues to be one of my mentors, one of my sources of inspiration. So his leadership did not begin in Tavshanai and Zion. It goes back those 40 years, or at least many of them. And for that, I'm tremendously grateful and indebted to you. And I appreciate your hospitality, the invitation. It is truly an honor to speak in this prominent and prestigious yeshiva. I also want to acknowledge my dear friend Rabbi Storch and so many other friends. I look around, I have family, I have mishpacha in here, friends, people I've known for years. It is really, really an honor to be with you here this morning, and I too want to acknowledge the sponsors who generously made this morning possible. I want to tell you a story which is a little bit humiliating, it's embarrassing. A few months ago I was giving a shiur in my shul, I give a parsha shiur on Tuesday mornings. And that day was my grandfather's yahrzeit. And I wanted to dedicate the shiur that morning in memory of my grandfather. And of course, when you dedicate something le'ilui nishmas, you try to mention the person's name. And when we mention their name is not complete to only mention their name. We mention their father's name. And so I thought for a moment, I'm going to dedicate the shiur in memory of my grandfather, Ben, my great-grandfather. And my grandfather's name, of course, I was familiar with and I knew. But as I thought before the shiur, I realized something unbelievably embarrassing. I wasn't clear on my great-grandfather's name. Now, we are a generation who lost our great-grandparents. Many of us, most of us, didn't know. Your generation is unbelievably blessed, many of you, to know great-grandparents. Ours never did, you have to understand. But still, how could it be? How could it be such a short time later, just a few generations later, and I couldn't even remember. I called my father to clarify so that I could dedicate the shiur appropriately. But I began to think to myself, will my great-grandchildren know my name? Will my great-great-grandchildren know my name? Will I be remembered? Will they be able to identify me, identify with me? What's the legacy that we leave? Now I know that if you're in high school, you're not thinking about your legacy and how you'll be remembered by your great-grandchildren. So let me put it to you a little bit differently. There are currently 7.3 billion people on Mother Earth. You, every one of us, we are one of over 7 billion people. That's a big number. It's a lot of people. It's very hard to feel that we matter, that we make a difference, that we are consequential among such an incredibly large number. And so what I want to spend our time with this morning is talking about how to find our place. We may have a home address, and every one of you has an email address. There are many ways that we identify, and yet we struggle to find our place in this world. How can we matter? How can we be relevant? How can we make a difference? Source number one. Mishnah Rosh Hashanah, Ba'arba Prakim Ha'olam Nidon, 4 times during the year, the world is judged. And the one that we are most familiar with is the one, the period in which we find ourselves right now, the third line. B'Rosh Hashanah Koboy Olam Over in the Fun of Kivnei Maron. On Rosh Hashanah, Koboy Olam. Everything in the world comes before God, Kivnei Maron. The Mishnah quotes a pasuk, Shenemar Yotzei Yachad Libam Ameven El Kol Maaseh. Now it's interesting. The Slonim Rebbe in his Nesiv HaShalom, but many others point out that the Mishnah is incongruous. The Mishnah is not consistent. Why is the Rosh Hashanah of Tishrei, the Rosh Hashanah that we just experienced, the only one of the four that the Mishnah quotes a pasuk for? Number one. Number two, what do you mean, kol bay olam? What do you mean, everything in the world? Shouldn't it say, the Jewish people come before God in judgment? And if not the Jewish people, shouldn't it say, humanity? Human beings come before God in judgment? Kol bay olam sounds like this chair, this desk, the tree outside. Everything in the world is judged by God. But what does it even mean to judge an inanimate object? How is a chair judged? How is a tree judged? What does the Mishnah mean? What is the Mishnah referring to? And we're going to come back to that in a moment. But first, I want to bring your attention to the Mishnah's metaphor. How do we come before God? What is the process of judgment during this period that began Rosh Hashanah and is continuing these Aseret Yemei Teshuva and will culminate this week with Yom Kippur? It's Kivnei Maron. We come before God like Bnei Maron. And in fact, this Mishnah is the image that Unisana Tokef, arguably the most stirring part of our davening, is trying to elicit in Source 2. So what does Kivnei Maron mean? There's a machlokas in Gemara Rosh Hashanah, Yirchas Amaral, Source 3. And there's three opinions, there's three perspectives. What does Bnei Maron mean? My Kivnei Maron. So the first is Hacha Targimu Kivnei Imron. In Bavel, they translate what's Bnei Maron? Like lambs. Like lambs. What does that mean? We're judged before God like lambs? Like a flock? Like a herd? What does that mean? Resh Lakish Amar, Kema'alos Beis Maron. Like the people who walk through the path in the Maron area. Maron is not sheep, it's a place. And lastly, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Kechayalo Shal Beis David. Bnei Maron is a reference to the legions, to the army, to David HaMelech, to King David's army. Three, it sounds like separate, independent opinions or translations. What's Bnei Maron? What should we be thinking about? How should we imagine ourselves when we come before God in judgment? Are we like sheep? Whatever that means. Are we as if walking on this path in this place called Maron? Or are we members of the army of David? The Maharal, if you turn the page, source 4, the Maharal is a phenomenal interpretation. Rabbi Yehuda Loewy of Prague in the 16th century says the Maharal, these three opinions are not separate and isolated from one another. The three opinions are each focused on and highlighting a different component of how we are to see ourselves, what we are to be thinking about this time of the year. And writes the Maharal, Nira da'ochi pirusho, ki targumo shel maronu imrono. The first explanation is we're like sheep. Ritzono lomar lefi pshuto, kiroa shir bodek bitzono, kein hu yizbarach bodek bitzurim, kiroa shir bodek tzono. Just like the shepherd who's responsible for the flock, reviews and looks at and counts every sheep in the flock, looks at each one, so too, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we don't blend in, but rather God looks at every one of us separate and apart. Omnam Reish Lakish Hosef. But the second opinion is not in distinction to the first, says the Maharal, it's adding to the first. Comes along Reish Lakish and he says, no, don't see yourself as being reviewed, being examined independently, but rather Echu Abadika Shu Kamalos Beis Maron. Kisham Yalu Echad Echad Veina Mako Machzik Yoser Me Echad Rak Echad Machzik. That path in the place called Maron was very narrow, very windy. Any of you have gone on summer trips to Israel or you've been in Israel on a teyul with your family and you know, sometimes they take you on some crazy narrow path on the side of a cliff. One wrong step, you could fall. Narrow, tiny, single file you walk along. I'm sorry. The first explanation was like a flock, was like sheep means the whole flock. Kadosh Baruch Hu looks at everything together. Second, Reish Lakish says, no, don't see it as blending together, everyone together. Single file. Everybody's looked at apart. But the third explanation, writes the Maharal, Omnam Shmua, about 10 wide lines down. Savar Kechayolos Beis David.
What's the problem?
You see, if we see ourselves as members of the whole flock, then we are suppressing our individuality. Who we are, what makes us unique. People in this room are dressed differently and have different looks and different pairs of glasses and different personalities and different skill sets, different backgrounds, different talents, different needs. Every one of us is different. And to see ourselves as part of a flock is to deny our individuality. It's unfair to our true individualized selves. So Rish Lakish says, you know what, don't see yourself as a flock. You're right. Like walking on the narrow path. See yourself as coming before God and being judged for who you are. Your uniqueness. Your individuality. Your being one of a kind. But lastly, Shmuel comes along and he says, but you know what? If you're so focused on individuality, it leads to ego. Egocentricity. You see yourself as the focus of the whole universe. Everything's about you. Everything's about your need for individual expression. So Shmuel comes along and he finds the compromise. Kichayelos beis David, like a member of an army. What is an army made up of? Different units. There's room for individualism within the army. People are members of different units in the army. But the whole army serves the same purpose. The army is united in its mission. And says Shmuel, that is the ultimate way to see ourselves and the way in which we are judged. When we stood before HaKadosh Baruch Hu on Rosh Hashanah and continuing today through Yom Kippur, we are to ask ourselves, what's our relationship with those around us? Are we members of the army? Are we in fact loyal to the flock? And at the same time, do we express our individuality? What makes us special? What makes us different? Maybe you'll appreciate this example a little bit more. But if you're on a team, sports, you have to strike that balance. On the one hand, your individual stats don't matter. It's not about how many points or assists you have or rebounds or block shots. It's not about your making the all-star team. You're a member of a team. And your responsibility is to blend in, to be part of the team. And the team's success is your success, and the team's failure is your failure. But on the other hand, we are individuals. We have a responsibility to make use of our talents. And there's one who's a point guard, and another is a power forward, and another is a center. And we're not just all playing the same position, because if we're all playing the same position, you're going to lose every game. You got to figure out what position you play. Where are your strengths? If you're a role player, you're a great defender and rebounder, stop shooting the ball. If you're great offensively, your defense is weak, then make sure you're getting help. Figure out your uniqueness. But if all you're focused on is you, then you're going to be padding your stats and you're going to put yourself ahead of the team. And so the blend, Kivnei Maron, means to understand, to define, to try to appreciate who you are, to identify your talents and skills and what makes you special and unique, and realize them for the purpose of the team. Not yourself. Not your ego, not your honor, not your being an all-star. But rather, seeing your success as the team's success. That's Kivnei Maron. You come before HaKadosh Baruch Hu this period of the year, and we're trying to understand, how can I be part of the DRS community and care about my community and at the same time see myself as an individual being true to who I am and to what makes me different? We're not interchangeable. We're not simply a copy of one another. Every one of us has a unique task in life, and we have to identify it and we have to try to fulfill it. Nesiv HaShalom in Source 7 explains Rosh Hashanah so beautifully, and I know it's a little anticlimactic a few days after Rosh Hashanah to talk about Rosh Hashanah. So I'm going to get you ready for next year. But I'm also going to help you appreciate where we are right now. In our davening, Rosh Hashanah is always referred to as Yom Hadin. It's the day of judgment. And we think of Rosh Hashanah as a day of judgment. And yet, if you open the Chumash, you simply look in the Torah, you do not see a reference to judgment with Rosh Hashanah. Zichron Trua, there's other components to it. Where's the judgment? So the Talmud Rebbe, based on the questions we asked on the Mishnah, says the following. And it'll change the whole way you think about this time of year. It literally transformed Rosh Hashanah, the Yom Narayim, for me. Says the Talmud Rebbe, Rosh Hashanah is not about judgment at all. Rosh Hashanah is the day that we're mamlech Hashem. It's the day that we coronate God, the King of Kings. His dominion, His rule, His omnipotence over us. God is involved intimately in all of our lives and in shaping our destiny. And Rosh Hashanah is the day we blow the trumpet, literally. The film The Gong says the shofar is the trumpet at the coronation ceremony, the inaugural ball, declaring God King. There's a presidential election coming up November 8th, and I'm not going to go near talking about the candidates, politics, anything about it. But there's an election November 8th, and a new president, Kosh Baruch Hu should watch over us closely, maybe Revach Vatzalah Yahudi Yudimi Makom Acher, who knows, we'll see what will happen. But somebody's going to be elected. And then come January, there's going to be an inauguration. And the day of the inauguration, that new president is going to attend a series of balls and parties and dress up and have to go to all these events celebrating his or her inauguration. And there's a major staff. You know, each candidate has a huge campaign team who they're working in different states and different counties and different cities. And they're on the internet and social media. An enormous team working to get them elected. And they're excited, and they're dedicated, and they're devoted, and they're working tirelessly. But you know what's going to happen? In January, the day of the inaugural ball, you know what's going to happen? The members of those campaign teams are going to stop and say to themselves, uh-oh, do I have a job tomorrow? We got our guy or we got our girl elected. Am I fulfilling a role which is indispensable, which is critical? Do I have a job in this cabinet tomorrow? Or am I done? So the inaugural day is going to be bittersweet for many members of the campaign team who got their candidate elected. Because some are going to recognize, you know what? I have finished my purpose. I'm done. I'm not needed. I don't have a job tomorrow. Says the Slama Rebbe, Rosh Hashanah is not about judgment. It's about coronating God. It's the inaugural ball. Ribono Shel Olam is the Melech Malchei Melachim. But you know what happens? The moment we say that, we realize, one second, am I fulfilling my purpose for which I was created? Do I have a job tomorrow? Am I completing my role, my mission here on earth? Does He need to keep me around? Am I doing what I was meant and born to do? And that's why Rosh Hashanah launches this period of Aseres Metshuva and Yom Kippur. Because Yom Kippur, God makes the decision. Yom Kippur, God makes the final call on whether or not we are fulfilling our mission. That's what Rosh Hashanah is really all about. And that's the question we're supposed to ask ourselves each and every day. The question is, are we fulfilling our mission, the unique reason for which we were created here on earth? You might be in 9th grade or 10th grade, 11th grade, 12th grade, say, my mission is to study hard and get good grades and get through the day. My mission is just to get along, my friends, my family, get through school. But you're selling yourself short. If you're in high school, you're an adult. As far as the Torah is concerned, you're a gadol, you're not a katan. You may be a minor legally, but from the Torah's perspective, you're not a minor. You are here for a reason. And you're in this school for a reason. And you're in this world for a reason. There's something special about you, which is different than everyone who came before you, and different than everyone who will come after. And you can make a mark. And you can leave a legacy that no one else can. And to think that your life is just about getting to the end of the day with good grades, getting to the end of the day without getting into trouble, getting into the end of the day, making it onto the team or rooting for your teams to win, that's not what your life is about. You're selling yourself short. You can fulfill a mission and make a difference. It doesn't matter your age or your stage of life or where you're at. You are unique and the world needs you. And your classmates need you. And your community and your family need what you can offer, and only you can offer, and nobody else can. And asking ourselves this question, why am I here and what am I meant to do? What can I contribute and how can I make a difference is the essence of all of life. The rest is commentary. The grades, what yeshiva you'll get into, what school you'll go, what profession you're going to lead, all of that are important, important questions in helping define you. But the question of you is, who am I? And what difference can I uniquely make? This is what the Ramchal begins, Mesilas Yesharim, by asking. Source 8. Yisod ha-chasidus v'shorosh ha-avodah ha-tmimahu she'yizbar v'yis'ameis etzel ha-adam ma'chovaso ba'olamo. The foundation of life, the essential question of life is to ask ourselves, why am I here? Yizbar v'yis'ameis etzel ha-adam, to clarify and to find the truth of ma'chovaso ba'olamo. What is my chova? What's a chova? What is my duty? What is my responsibility to the world? Now notice it says olamo. What's the translation here? The wrong translation. What does the word olamo mean? So the translation here is inaccurate. It says the world. What's the accurate translation? What's the difference between the world and his world? The difference is my world is not your world. Your world is not my world. We have different parents and backgrounds and socioeconomic statuses. We have different levels of intelligence and artistic ability and athleticism. We have different interests and likes and hobbies. Our worlds overlap, but they're not the same. And says the Ramchal, the beginning of feeling meaning and purpose and happiness and fulfillment in life is to recognize that I'm not you and you're not me, and we should stop measuring ourselves against one another. My job, my duty, my responsibility is to figure out, given my life, given who I am, given my talents and skills and my deficiencies and liabilities, but given the circumstance that I was born into, what do I do with it now? What do I do with it now? How do I want to make a difference? How do I want to leave a legacy? What kind of impact do I want to have? There's a book by David Brooks, New York Times columnist, called The Road to Character. And here's a short excerpt in Source 9 on pages 5 and 6. You can read it on your own. But in The Road to Character, David Brooks points out that what we're witnessing and experiencing in our generation, in your generation in particular, no offense, is the exact opposite of what the Ramchal writes. We are living in a world, he writes, about status updates. All that matters is my status. Not what's my duty and obligation or responsibility to the world, but what did I just eat for dessert? Here's a picture. Who am I hanging out with? And making a weird face and taking a picture, and that's my status update. What's my status? Look at me. Check me out. Look who I met. Look at the celebrity I happened to meet in the airport or run into. Look at my tip. Status update. And the other phenomenon he writes about is selfies. The word selfie tells you everything. A selfie. The Ramchal would never take a selfie. I don't know what the opposite of a selfie is, but ma'chovaso ba'olamo is not a selfie. Listen to what Brooks writes on page 6. Public language has become demoralized. Google engrams measure word usage across media. Google scans the contents of books and publications going back decades. Look what Google can do, aside from knowing everything about you that you don't want them to know. Listen to what Google can do. Google reads everything available. There's Google Books. So libraries are all uploaded. Google has access to libraries and magazines and blogs and everything that's been written, Google can analyze. You type in a word and you can see over the years which words have been used more frequently and which less. Over the past few decades, there's been a sharp rise in the usage of individualistic words. Phrases like self, personalized, I come first, I can do it myself. A sharp decline in words like community, share, united, common good. The use of words having to do with economics and business has increased, and the language of morality and character building is in decline. Usage of words like character, conscience, virtue, all declined over the course of the 20th century. Usage of the word bravery has declined by 66%. Gratitude is down 49%. Humbleness is down 52%. Kindness is down 56%. It's the age of the selfie and the status update. Look at me, and it's about me. It's the age of what are my rights and entitlements? Oh, I'm going to join that club. What are the privileges? What do I get for it? What are the benefits? Oh, I earned a status on the airline. What are the benefits? I'm joining Costco. What are the benefits? I'm joining. I got a new credit card. What are the rights? What are the privileges? What do I get? And that's the attitude we have for all of life. What can I get from life? It says that I'm chal. No! The question is not, what are my rights and entitlements? It's ma chovaso ba'olamo. What can I give the world, not take from it? What can I leave, not take away? What are my duties and obligations? What are my responsibilities, not my rights and privileges and entitlements? And how do we fulfill them? How do we accomplish that? We do it, first of all, by having self-awareness. By coming to learn who we are and what makes us tick and what makes us different and unique and individualized. Guys, it's a crime to see yourselves the same as everyone else, to feel you fit into a mold, to dress the same, think the same, look the same, act the same, is a crime. You're stealing from the Eibishter, you're stealing from the Ribono Shel Olam, the individuality that He gave you. It's a gift, it's a bracha. And it comes with responsibility. Nesiv HaShalom elsewhere, Parshas Lech Lecha, source 10, writes that this was the mission of Avram Avinu. His challenge, his test, a test that the Medrash contemplates might be even more difficult than the Akedah we just read about on Rosh Hashanah. Twice, Avram is tested Lech Lecha. Lech Lecha me'aretzlecha me'molaretzlecha me'beis avicha and Lech Lecha el har hamoriyu. One is the test of leaving your father's home, leave your homeland, your community, and the other is the test of go to Har HaMoriah and slaughter your son. And the Medrash wonders, which one is harder? Which one is harder? Are you kidding me? Which one is harder? Go take your son, beloved son, the one in whom you see your entire destiny, put him on an altar, take a knife and slit his throat. Or pack your belongings and move out from mom and dad. Says the Medrash, which one's harder? Which one's harder? And the Medrash concludes the obvious answer, that the Lech Lecha of the Akedah is harder. But what was the Hav Amina? What's the Hav Amina? And the Shlomo Rebbe, who doesn't ask the question in that way, but he answers, don't ever underestimate the test of Lech Lecha me'artzecha me'artzecha me'beis avicha. You know what that test is? It's Lech Lecha. Self-discovery. Figure out who you are. It's dangerous to say in the father's son, but you're not just who your parents envisioned you to be. You're not just the bumper sticker. Dr. Pelkovitz likes to talk about every family's got a bumper sticker on their car. You know, some say Ivy League or Boston, some say New York Giants, New York Jazz, some say whatever yeshiva they went to, you have to go to. Some say you got to be a hedge fund manager, you got to be a doctor, you got to be Lech Lecha. Of course, a parent's dreams and aspirations and visions for a child are critically important in influencing and molding and shaping that young man. Of course they're important. But every one of us should not just be the result of society, the style, the fashion, what's in, what everyone else wants us to be, what everything else is pushing us to be. It's the test of Lech Lecha. Who are you? And you, and you, and you. What makes you, what makes us each individuals? What makes every one of us different and distinct and apart? He writes the Shlomo Rebbe elsewhere. He says, this is the true Avodah Zarah. It's an amazing idea. True Avodah Zarah is not bowing down to some idol other than Hashem, but it's engaging in Avodah, which is Zarah to you. We all have an Avodah. We have a mission. We have a role to play. When we have the self-awareness to figure out what makes us tick, what makes us different, and what contribution can I make, that becomes our avodah. And when we try to do the avodah of someone else, when we try to be like someone else, when we try to simply fit the mold of someone else, that's an avodah which is zara to us. It's a form of avodah zara. It's a form of idolatry. Because I'm worshipping the mold. I'm worshipping this template rather than figure out who I am and who I am meant to be. Because the world needs the contributions that I and only I can make. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Teshuvah, we're all familiar with, At this time of year, we should see the whole world as being scales which are even. And our next action, the choice you're going to make this afternoon when you leave here, could tip the scale in either direction. How you spend your time, what you look at, what you say, whether you make a bracha before you eat, your character, whether you go to a chesed, that next choice that you have could be the defining choice that can make all the difference in the world. And you may think, well, it's a small choice. Are you kidding me? It's a little thing. What does it matter? What difference does it make? I just flew up from Florida. Small differences make an enormous impact. We faced a Category 4 hurricane. Many of you, I'm sure, were affected negatively by Sandy. Just to put it in perspective, Sandy was a Category 2. We faced a hurricane that was twice as strong, that would have been catastrophic, that would have been lethal. 140 mile an hour winds. I've lived through numerous hurricanes. They're not fun. They're dangerous. This one threatened to be devastating. And all indications were it was heading right towards us. And in my neighborhood, people were boarding up, people were stocking up, people were hunkering down, and more than anything, they were davening. More sincerely, probably, than they've davened in a long time. And you know what happened? This big storm, Matthew, that was heading right our way, it did what the forecasters call a little wiggle. A little wiggle. It did a little tance. A little wiggle. Little wiggle to the northeast. And instead of wiping out our community and blowing our roofs off and blowing our windows in and having trees land on our houses and our cars and God forbid ourselves, the thing, just a tiny little fraction of a little difference, stayed on the coast. And we had a nicer day than you're having here today. A small change of direction, a tiny altering of the angle of the trajectory of your life, can change the destiny of countless people around you, can make an enormous difference. The scales are even. The choices we'll make today when we leave here, what we look at, what we say, what we listen to, what we watch, what we choose to do, how we spend our time, can change the destiny of so many around us. Our small choices can have cosmic implications. 1963, there was a meteorologist, Edward Lorenz. He introduced the world to a concept called the butterfly effect. He showed scientifically that flapping of a butterfly's wing in Australia can cause a tornado in Kansas, or a monsoon in Indonesia, or a hurricane in South Florida. Lorenz's theory became part of a greater theory called chaos theory, and it was used in engineering and mathematics and physics and economics and almost every field. Chaos theory. He proved a butterfly flaps its wings. A tiny little cute butterfly flaps its little wings. And that sets in motion wind that can create a tsunami or a tornado or a hurricane halfway around the world. Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks, in his book To Heal a Fractured World, coined the phrase, the chaos theory of virtue. That we can flap our little wings with chesed. We can flap our little wings to do something which is a schus. We can flap our little wings to do a mitzvah, to make a difference, to make a change. And it can create a tornado or a tsunami of chesed halfway around the world. We don't begin to understand the impact that we can make. Mishnah Nova says, "B'makom she'enis yustadal yosish," in a place where there's no man, be a man. The Rambam writes, what does that mean? It means be that man that only you can be. Nobody else can bring to the world what you can bring, because every one of us is unique, different, and distinct, separate and apart from everyone around us. We have our own talents and skills and personality. We have our own opportunities to make a difference. And that's what we're told to take advantage of. Source 11, Rabbi Freifeld, Zichrono Livracha, describes, founder of Shai Yashav here in this neighborhood, I think back in my own experience to when I finally began to make something of my life, and I can identify the day. In those days I was in yeshiva surrounded by a group of brilliant geniuses. These were my friends, my associates, my role models. I tried to pattern myself after them. And then one day I sat down in a room by myself. I put my head in my hands and I had a heart-to-heart talk with myself. You're not brilliant, I told myself. You're not a genius or near genius. You have to be who you are. You have to start your learning from the fundamentals and work your way up. There are no shortcuts for you. Believe me, the experience was painful. I felt as if a dagger had plunged into me, but it was my liberation, my personal exodus. That day was the turning day of my life. You know, some of you here are the masmitim. You're the ones who burn the midnight oil. You're in this base medrash, learning at every opportunity. And others are the one who care, chesed. You're looking out for the isolated guy who feels alone, who needs someone to reach out. And others of you are the ones who take the best notes. And when you're kind, you share them with your classmates whose notes may not be as comprehensive. And others of you collected staka during shacharis. And others of you are destined to be the class president. And others of you, everyone here is different. And if you compare yourself to someone else, and you hold yourself to the standard of someone else, and you ask yourself why you're not someone else, you're not going to become them. You're just going to torture yourself and feel guilty and inadequate and incomplete and irrelevant. Like Rabbi Freifeld, the answer is for us to stop comparing ourselves. Certainly to be inspired and motivated by those around us, but to stop comparing ourselves and to figure out, you know what? I may not be as brilliant, I may not be as outgoing, I may not be as creative, I may not be, but here's who I am. This is what I bring to the table. This is what makes me tick. And this is the role I can play in this yeshiva and in my family and in my community. And growing up, this is the impact that I can have on the world. Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal in Source 12 also describes in his autobiographical reflections, second paragraph, it was clear to me from a very early age, I wanted to be able to make some difference, to leave the world a little better than I found it. It was clear to me, as a Jew, as a Ben Torah, and meant trying to work within the ambiance of the Jewish people, and the Torah-oriented part in particular. The aspiration, next paragraph, the yearning, the valuing of making the world a better place, that could have taken a number of forms. And he describes, the bottom paragraph, this decision is something that grows upon you. It's not as if you sit down one morning, you make a list of the pros and cons, and you decide. It's one of the most important decisions of your life. It takes time. And then one morning you wake up and you know this is it. This is what you want. This is where you're headed. This is what you can see yourself doing. This is who you are meant to be. And the difference that you can leave in the world. Piasetzna Rebbe. Kalanamas Kalman Shapir of Piasetzna. Hashem Yikom Damo. In his Tzav Viziruz, his spiritual diary, writes about fulfilling our responsibility of individualism in the world. Just look at the English, it's getting late, page 10. He writes, second paragraph, are you like a plant or an animal whose individual essence is just one of a kind? What is in the species is in the specimen, which is why they have no free will. Their instincts are not under their individual control, but under that of the collective laws of the species. Their willfulness does not rise out of individual need, but out of the collective need of the species. Trees don't look the same. And the plants and the bushes, they look the same. And the chairs and the tables, they're the same. Is that who we want to be? You're just the same. You're just wearing the same, you're following the same style, thinking the same way, listening to the same music, singing the same song. You're just, no individualism, no free will, suppressing and forfeiting and denying the bracha of our difference. That's what he writes at the end. And this is not some privilege reserved only for the great luminaries. The idea of recognizing your unique gifts is not just for the Gedolei Ador, the Tzaddikim, the Talmidei Chachamim, the world leaders, the candidates for office, Lahavdil. Rather, each and every little one of us has not only the right, but the obligation to express his unique individual self. And to the degree that you're able to live in this world from the very center of your unique self, to that degree will you be able to exercise your individual free will. In other words, you want your life to have meaning and purpose. It's not just about doing well in your Gemara grade or your math test. It's not just about which yeshiva you get into, what school you'll do, how well you'll do on the SATs. It's not about padding your stats on the basketball team or the hockey team. Those are all fun, and those are all parts of life, and they're wonderful. But if you want to make your mark on this world, and if you want to find the fulfillment of having free will, it's figuring out who you are. and what difference you're going to make. Rabbi Tatz, in his wonderful book, The Thinking Jewish Teenager's Guide to Life, source 14, I didn't just quote this to teenagers, I quoted this source to my entire shul because I think it's a guide, not just for teenagers, it's an amazing guide for all of us. If you want to figure out and define your role in life, here's how to do it. Take a clean sheet of paper and you draw a circle. You write down the features of your personality. Every aspect of your character, every talent you have, include everything. You need to put in much more than the things you recognize in the formal school system. All your personality traits have to be clearly identified and included. Are you warm and empathic? Do you find that others always seem to pour out their stories to you? Are you not that good with people? Do you have technical gifts? You understand tools and machines? Are you mainly intellectual or emotional? What are your tastes? What sort of person do you get on with? Are you talented, musical, athletic? You put in everything. Then outside the circle, you write the things that you're not. There may be personal qualities or talents you wish you had, but you lack them. Write them down on the outside. Study the circle and its contents. Study it well. You're looking at a picture of yourself. The real you. Not the person you may fantasize about being, but the real you. Outside the circle are your fantasies. Inside the circle is you. If you want to know what you're meant to be doing in this world, look at your circle. The contents of the circle are your tools. Your task is to use those tools to their maximum. If those are the tools you've been given, they define your role in your life's work. If you were placed on a building site with a bag of tools by an intelligent foreman, all you need to do is look around and see what's being built in your immediate vicinity, what tools you have, and you'll know what you should be doing. Obviously, you've been given exactly the tools you need for the job. Life's not a joke. You have a task to accomplish, and you have most definitely been given all that you need to accomplish it. So our personality, our traits, are our tools. There's work to do. Look at the work to do, look at your set of tools, and we'll all know what it is that we should be doing. Not looking on others with jealousy, as Rav Volba writes in Source 15, but rather recognizing our unique place. Like the Piazetzner Rebbe writes again in Source 16. One of the 48 ways Torah's acquired, Tratori Niknes Ben Mishnah Pirkei Avos, is Amakiros Makomo. If you want to accept and receive and live Torah, it's not to live someone else's space. It's to be Makiros Makomo, to find your space. What's your place in the world? It's not your email address or your Instagram account or your Facebook or your Snapchat. Those are the way that you interact with the world, but that's not your place in the world. Your place in the world is figuring out what makes you different and what contribution can you leave the world. How do you use Instagram and Snapchat? Is it all about status? Is it about me? Do you share your selfies? Or is it about connecting with others? Giving, contributing, transforming, changing. Are you flapping those wings of virtue to bring a tsunami of change? A hurricane of benefit to the world? Or is the world really all about us? On Yom Kippur, my friends, we're going to read, as the day is passing, the Haftorah and Mincha of Yom Kippur is Sefer Yonah. Sefer Yonah is an interesting book. I don't have time to talk about it at length. It doesn't even deal with the Jewish people. Why are we reading that? Holiest day of the year. Heading towards the holiest moment, the climax of the year. As the gates are closing. And we read the story of Nineveh. And I would like to suggest to you the reason we're reading Yonah. As Yom Kippur is coming to a close, and with it the end of Aseres Yemei Tshuva, the period in which we are asking the Kol Boi Olam over in the fun of, that everything on earth is asking, do I have a job tomorrow? Am I fulfilling my mission and role? Am I worthy of my contract being renewed? Will I be here tomorrow? Sefer Yonah reminds us that we cannot run away from our mission. It chases us. Yonah tries to run away. Kadosh Baruch Hu sends him and he says, I'm not interested. It's not me. It's not for me. I'm not interested. I'm good. Ask someone else. And Yonah reminds us that we can't run away from our mission. We are born to complete it. Every one of us has a mission statement of why we're here on earth. And the mission statement is not to be in the honors class or the middle class. The lower mission statement is not to make that team. The mission statement is not to be the best dressed or the best this, most musical. The mission statement is, how do we use all of those things to make our mark, to leave our mark on the world? That's why we're here. The Ger Rebbe says, Hashem gave us assets and talents. And if we don't use them properly, we have stolen from Him. we have stolen from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This morning when you woke up, hopefully the first words off your lips were Moda Ani Lefanecha Melechai V'Kayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm so grateful to you. Shechazarta B'Nishmasi B'Chemla. You gave, that's the right way to say it by the way. Shechazarta B'Nishmasi B'Chemla Rabba Emunasecha. Not B'Chemla Rabba Emunasecha. But Shechazarta B'Nishmasi B'Chemla, you gave me back my soul with your loving kindness, with your generosity, with your graciousness. Rabba Emunasecha. Translate those words. Rabba, great. Emunasecha is your faith. Who does God have faith in? I thought faith works the opposite. Emunah is my faith in God. What do you mean Emunasecha, God, your faith? Who does God have faith in? Where is God's faith directed? And the answer is, if you woke up this morning, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has faith in you. Rav Tzadik HaKohen writes that there are two forms of emunah that a Jew has to carry every day. Our belief in Hashem and our knowledge that Hashem has belief in us. If we are here in this world, if we woke up this morning, we have a mission, we have a purpose yet to accomplish. You know, Thursday night we went to sleep in Boca Raton, and even though we knew that the worst of the hurricane passed us by, still pretty windy outside, lots of rain, following the news, we're hearing about tens of thousands of people without power, our lights were flickering and flickering, and each time they had, hold on, hold on. You went to sleep, you didn't know if you'd wake up with power or not. Woke up in the morning, and you looked, and the alarm clock was still on. Oh, Moda Ani Lefanecha. Wow. Such gratitude, the power is on. But every morning that we wake up, if we're alive, if we woke up, the power is on in us. We are alive, we're here. We have something to contribute. We have a difference to make. We have a legacy to leave this world. Rabba Emunasecha. If you start to doubt yourself, say, I'm not so smart. I'm not the smartest kid in the class. I'm not the best learner. I'm not the most athletic. I'm not so artistic. I'm not so outgoing. I'm not a born leader. Why am I here? What can I leave? Nice speech, but what difference can I make? If you ever start to doubt yourself, just remember the words. You're allowed to repeat them again during the day. Rabba Emunasecha. Hashem has faith in you. He brought you to this world for a reason. You have something to accomplish. And we have to get to the business of figuring out what that is. There's some people whose job it is to accomplish enormous things. Rav Meir Shapiro founded the Daf Yomi. And look how that transformed the world. Changed the world. How many people are learning and learning consistently and being Messiah Masechtas and Shas? Because Rav Meir Shapiro had an idea that was not accepted at first. In fact, it was ridicule. But he stuck with his idea. And that was his contribution, among many others. And it transformed the world. He's a guy I went to school with, I went to camp with. He was a friend of mine when I was your age. His name is Joe Gittler. He moved to Israel and he realized, you know what? Farmers, he looked around at the poverty situation in Israel. How many are living below the poverty line? How many have nothing to eat? How many are struggling to find food? And then he also heard all about the farmers who, after they harvest their field, whether because they had an abundance of harvest or because of the market prices or whatever reason, leave part of their field fallow. They leave it behind. And he put two and two together and he said, you know what? What if we found volunteers to collect the rest of the things in the field and we took that food and we gave it to the people who need food? And an organization was born. How many people here ever volunteered for Leket? Do you know how many tons, literally tons of food is collected? How many mouths are fed? Because a guy, I went to school, just an ordinary guy, instead of thinking, oh, that would be interesting, pursued it and chased it and decided that would be his mark on the world. Thousands, tens, hundreds of thousands over the period of time will be fed because he decided to make a difference. A woman, Rachel Sharitz, who was diagnosed with cancer, Zichron Levracha, and in the doctor's office, after getting the results and waiting to meet the oncologist, decided she doesn't feel like going at this alone. And people struggling with her cancer feel isolated and need help. So she decided she was going to create an organization because her life circumstance put her in a place to enable her to imagine. And now there's Shasharit, making such a difference to so many people. There's an actor who passed away very recently. I'm finishing up, by the way. I didn't take into account your introduction, so I still have a couple minutes. I'll end before the opening kickoff, I promise. There's an actor who passed away named Stephen Hill. He wasn't famous in your day, but many of us know him from Mission Impossible and Law and Order and a number of famous TV series and films he was in. A number of years ago, there was an article in a magazine, not recommending the magazine, but it's called Esquire Magazine. And the title of the article was, "The Top 10 Who Tasted Greatness and Choked on It." That was the name of the article. Top 10 Who Tasted Greatness and Choked on It. You haven't heard the 10 people because they choked on the greatness. They include athletes who had the opportunity to be the best of the generation, but they ended up flopping. They include all kinds of people. You know their number one person who tasted greatness but then choked on it? Esquire Magazine. Was Stephen Hill, and I want to read to you their entry. Martin Landau once said, quote, "When I first became an actor, there were two young actors in New York, Marlon Brando and Stephen Hill. A lot of people said Stephen would have been the one, not Marlon. He was legendary, nuts, volatile, mad, and his work was exciting. One of these men went on to revolutionize acting and win two Oscars. Marlon Brando. What happened to Stephen Hill?" asks Esquire magazine. And they answer, "You know what happened? Orthodox Judaism. Deciding he needed to devote himself to his faith, he chose to honor the Sabbath by not working from sunset on Friday to sunset Saturday. He finally achieved the taste of success playing Adam Schiff on Law and Order. But he tasted greatness and he choked on it." For them, he was the number one choker. For us, he's the number one hero. You think when he was welcomed to Shamayim a few weeks ago, Kodesh Baruch Hu said, "Here's the number one loser. Here's my winner." Stephen Hill looked at the world and said, "Machovasi ba'olami, here's my world. I'm in the world of acting. I'm in Hollywood. And I've discovered something called Shabbos. I can change the world by deciding to put Shabbos ahead of acting." Esquire called him a failure. To us, he's a model of success. He looked at his life and his circumstance and his unique talents and said, "Machovasi ba'olami, why am I here? And what difference can I make?" But it's not just true on the grand scale of Joe Gittler and Rav Meir Shapiro and Rachel Schurz and Stephen Hill. In the tiniest, smallest ways, we can have a difference too. A man was once walking on a deserted beach at sunset. And as he walked, he could see a young boy in the distance. And as he drew nearer, closer to the young boy, he saw that the young boy was walking along the sea, along the ocean, and he kept bending down, picking something up and throwing it into the water. Time and again, he was bending down and hurling the thing into the ocean. So as the man approached closer and closer, he was able to see that the boy was picking up starfish that had washed ashore onto the beach, and he was throwing them back. So the man walked up to the boy, and he said to him, "Look, what are you doing?" The boy said, "I'm throwing the washed up starfish back in the ocean because otherwise they lack oxygen, they need to live, they need the ocean." But the man said, "Look around, look at the beach. There's hundreds, there's thousands. You can't count how many there are. Look how many there are. You can't possibly make a difference." So the boy looked down, he thought for a moment. Then he picked up one starfish and he turned to the man. He threw it in the ocean and he said, "I bet it made a difference to that one. I bet it made a difference to that one." The small differences we can make. You lent your homework, you checked in on the kid who wasn't in school today, you made sure everyone was picked for a team, you learned with somebody who wasn't necessarily at your level, you help at home, even though you have a lot of things to do, but you want to play your role in the family. What's the contribution? I had a conversation with my kids once. I said, "You know, you each take a lot from our family. You come home from school, you expect dinner to be ready and served, us to take you to the mall shopping for the clothing you're wearing, you're able to download from iTunes what you want, you have everything, here's my rights and entitlements. What are the privileges of being a Goldberg? What do I get out of it? What comes with being a member of the family?" I said, I want to have a conversation with you. What are you bringing to the family? What do you uniquely bring to the family that your siblings are not? What's your role in our family? Are you the one that makes everyone happy? Are you the one that helps in this way? Are you the one that can be counted on for that? Are you the? What's your role? What do you bring to your family? Every one of us can make a difference. Avram Avinu's legacy is that he fulfilled and he passed the test of Lech Lecha. He figured out who he was. And you know who he was? He was destined to revolutionize the world by introducing the entire world to monotheism, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Avram looked at his unique set of circumstances and he fulfilled Lech Lecha. He discovered who he was, and the result was that he changed the world. So I close with this, the last source, page 20, page 14, source 20. Revolt the quotes in Ali Shor, a tradition from Yisrael Salanter. Omer of Yisrael, Ha'etza ha'yechida liskos bedin hi, lios adam shaharabim tzrichim lo. Ish hakla. Yom Kippur's coming up. You want to succeed? You want to triumph? You want to persevere in judgment? You want to be written and sealed for a great year of health for you and your parents, your grandparents, the people around you, for prosperity, financially, your family to do well and have opportunity. You want to succeed in your grades and in life. Then it's not about status updates and selfies. It's about the opposite, says Rabbi Yisrael. Be a person that others rely on. Because when you are being judged by God, if you live alone, then God says, bring me his file. Let me check out how he's doing. But if you're a person that others rely on, if you're contributing and giving to the world, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know what? I got to keep him healthy and happy because others need him. It's not just about him. It's about the people around him as well. So the question I leave you with, for every one of us to ask ourselves, what's my mission? Why am I here? Am I irreplaceable? If I, chas v'shalom, disappeared from my family, what would be missing? If I disappeared from my school, if I moved to another city and changed schools, what would my classmates like? What would be different? In what way am I irreplaceable? Am I indispensable? Would anything be different if I disappeared? And if the answer is no, everything would be the exact same, then we're not fulfilling our purpose in this world. Give all of us the bracha that we should be zocha, we should succeed in answering ma'achal v'aseinu ba'olameinu. What is our purpose and role in our world? That when we come before HaKadosh Baruch Hu kivnei maron, may he in fact sign and seal us for a year of only bracha v'hatzlacha. Thank you so much.